We're doing the book of Mishlei. We're up to what is commonly called the sixth chapter. It's a new semester, so we'll reintroduce. The book of Mishlei is a book of Proverbs, Mishalim, written by King Solomon. It is a great work, a work of genius, which King Solomon writes in the introduction to the work, that this work will educate every person on his level. The work, says King Solomon, has multiple levels of interpretation. Even if you only understand the simple understanding, you'll get something from it. If you get the deeper understanding, you'll get even more out of it. And we're starting the work again, really. We're up to what the Christians call the sixth chapter. And we'll begin. We try to understand on the simple level what King Solomon is telling us, and also we try to quote from some of the traditions we have as to what's the meaning behind the proverb. What else is he telling us? And we're about to begin a very, very important message. If you guys don't get anything else from tonight's learning, I hope you at least get what we're about to learn, because it could save your finances. Shlomo HaMelech says, Bini, he's talking to his son, he's talking to any and every one of us, which he treats like his son and giving us such good advice. And he says, again, it's a new semester, so I'll just mention, we read it with a traditional Sephardi tune, and then I translate. I read a pasuk, and then I translate. Bini imaravta l'reyecha, takata lazahar kapecha. Son, if you co-signed for your friend, so your friend needed a loan, he needed to buy a house, he needed to buy a car, he needed to rent an apartment. And he said, could you just co-sign? Could you just sign, undersign for me? Are you talking to me? Takata lazal kapecha. So you should know that although you co-signed for your friend, but you shook hands with a stranger. The lender, or the guy who's chasing after your friend, well, he's not your friend. Very often a friend will come and say, could you co-sign for me? I get these requests a few times a year. And you have to realize, it's not your friend who you owe the money to. If you're co-signing, you're co-signing a loan to a complete stranger. Takata lazal kapecha. Realize that if you signed that dotted line, you have shook hands with a stranger. Nokashta, nokashta ve'im reficha, nilkadta ve'im reficha. And you should realize, says King Solomon, that you've entrapped yourself with what you've said and what you've done. You have set up your own trap and you've entered it. Asei zot eifo bini vehinatzel. Here's what you do, son, and save yourself. Kivata bechafreyecha lech hitrafes uhav reyecha. Shlomo Amel says, here's what you got to do. Save yourself, because you're responsible now. So put yourself down and put yourself down before your friend and grovel and beg. The first problem that most people have, and this is a formula that repeats itself in people's marriage, in their business, in their investments, the first problem that they have is that they don't realize that they have a problem. And that can sometimes be the final problem. Because until a person realizes or is willing to realize he has a problem, then he doesn't realize that there's anything wrong. Investments go up, investments go down. So what if he's at 75% loss and they're about to close his account? It'll go back up. Who said it'll go back up? a guy could be in a marriage and his wife is already changing the locks on the doors, and he says, yeah, sometimes marriages have their rough moments. Well, maybe this is more than that. Maybe he has to do something about it. A guy could be going for a drink every night, and he says, well, I'm just taking it easy. What's wrong? Yeah, but how come you can't take it easy without a drink? The first problem that most people have is their incapacity to recognize that they have a problem. And that could bury a person. Because we have tools to deal with problems. I was in the consulate this morning. So there was a man who couldn't read English. So the clerk says to him, you filled out the form wrong. Go fill it out right. So he says, I don't know how. And the clerk says, I have a whole waiting room. I can't help you do it. So I look at this young man. He's wearing yarmulke. I'm wearing yarmulke. There's a room full of people wearing yarmulkes. But instead of asking one of us, can you help me? What he does is he waits. And after each person that goes to the clerk, he comes back and tries to rehand him the same piece of paper that he filled out wrong. So the clerk eventually gets fed up and says to him, you know, stop coming back. You got to fill it out right. I'm not going to accept it just because you came back three times with the same form misfilled out. He wasn't willing to recognize he has a problem. He misfilled out the form. He got it wrong. So it's like a mouse that keeps hitting the wall and keeps coming back to the same wall. Well, one of the great gifts that God gave us is the intelligence to overcome obstacles. One of the reasons that working with robotics is so difficult is because every living organism is given the tools to be innovative. If we hit an obstacle, the first thing our mind does is it asks itself, how do I overcome that? Robots can't do that. What you program them to do, they can do. What you don't program them to do, they can't do. And part of living, part of contending with nature, is being able to contend with new obstacles. Well, you know what? Every one of us is given tools to contend with obstacles. And it doesn't matter what the obstacle is. There are always tools to deal with it. But that is provided that you're willing to recognize that you have a problem, that there's something that has to be dealt with. There's a girl, she's a married woman, she has quite a few children already. She went to have a test done. Her doctor was concerned about something, and they thought she might have cancer. So she got the results for the test, but she didn't feel like she had time or strength to read them. So she left the closed envelope on her table. And it stayed there for a week, 2 weeks. Believe it or not, she's a nurse in the hospital. You'd think she'd know better. After a long period of time, God did her a great favor. A friend of hers came by her desk and said, what's that? And she said, oh, nothing, and tried to put it in the drawer. And her friend said, no, that's not nothing. What is that? And grabbed the envelope. And she said, well, she told her the story. And her friend did her a big favor. She opened up the envelope, and it turns out that she had cancer. But because her friend was willing to look at what the problem was, she said, I don't want to hear it. Don't tell me if it's not good news. And her friend said, no, we're going to deal with this together. And thanks to that friend, she's still alive today, free of cancer. She underwent the treatment, and today she's alive. But it wouldn't have had such a happy ending had she continued in her belligerent way and said, I don't want to see what it says in that envelope. And we hear the story and it shocks us, but the truth is we all do that. We all have areas in our lives where we prefer to ignore what's really going on. Shlomo HaMelech begins his advice by saying an introduction. He says, you made a mistake. You should not have cosigned. He hasn't yet told us how to get out of it, so why is he harping on the point? When the Navi wants to describe King David's error in educating his children, the Navi says he did not educate his children well because he never told them, why'd you do that? So as a kid, it always bugged me when someone asked, why'd you do that? Because I always said, you know, I did it, it's done. Why are you asking me why I did that? You never made mistakes. You want to tell me in advance, don't do it. Okay, I can hear you. But after the fact, what do I gain from that? So I'll tell you a story. I wasn't a kid anymore. I was teaching here at Machon Meir. And we had a special group come to the house, and someone had just brought me a sizable sum of money to give to tzedakah. And suddenly there's a knock on the door, and a bunch of people are about to enter the house. And I don't have time to put everything together. I'm watching all the kids. I have to prepare the table, and the people are supposed to come. So I take the sum of money, and I put it somewhere in the kitchen. I figure everyone's going to be out in the room where we're learning, and I'll put the sum of money in the kitchen. So I put the sum of money in the kitchen, and I don't have time to deal with it. We sit down, we have the class, and then I say goodbye to all the guys, and I come back to the kitchen, and the money's gone. So I call Rav Listman. And I said to Rav Listman, I said, there was one guy who went to the bathroom, and there was one guy who went to the kitchen during the class. What do you suggest we do? Turns out I made a mistake. The money was never taken. I had misremembered where I put it. But Rav Listman did me a big favor. He did something that ordinarily only a parent would do. He said to me, Netanel, what do you learn from this? So I said, not to be quick to judge guys. He said, leave that. What else do you learn from this? I said, what do you mean? And you know, when someone tells you that, your first thought is, you're not my father, what are you giving me a Musa Shmuz for? But no, he said to me, don't leave money lying around. You had money you had to deal with, it should have been in an envelope, it shouldn't have been on the table. You don't leave money where people can see it. And you know how many times that message that he told me has rung in my head? It wasn't pleasant to hear it when he said it, but he taught me something. You know, even after that happened, I could have made the same mistakes 10 times again. Because life is like that. You don't always have the time to deal with things the way you want to. But that's because we also don't identify, what did I do wrong? What can I learn from it? So Shlomo HaMelech begins by telling us, Nokashta v'imrificha, I want you to recognize what you did wrong. You entrapped yourself with what you said and what you did. Next, I'll tell you how to get out of it. Well, you need your friend because he's the one that owes the debt. You just co-signed the debt. So go and beg. Now isn't the time for pride. Because you're really being held in the grasp of your friend. He's still your friend, but now he's got you by the neck. If he doesn't pay the loan, you're going to have to pay it. So go and beg your friend. Al titen sheina le'enecha utnuma le'afatecha. Don't give your eyes rest. Don't give your eyelids any dozing. Go deal with it. One of the big problems we have in life is that we don't see a problem till it explodes in our face. Notice, they haven't come collecting from you yet. Shlomo HaMelech is saying, if you co-signed, you made a mistake, you entrapped yourself, and go beg. But you're going to tell Shlomo, who told you he's not going to pay? He's my friend. Who told you there'll ever be a problem? And that's one of the great wisdoms that King Solomon repeatedly teaches us in Mishle. He repeatedly warns us, don't wait for the problem to arise. Look in advance. Beware of what's ready to happen. And so Shlomo over here tells us, don't give yourself any rest. Hinatzel kitzvi miyad uchtzipo miyad yakush. Save yourself like a deer that tries to escape the hand that tries to catch it, and like a bird that tries to escape the trap. Meaning, you have to realize that you're in a situation like a bird in the trap. They haven't yet taken out the knife. They're not yet going to kill you, right? Wrong, you're in the trap. So very often in life, we like to think everything's okay. Nothing's wrong yet. But when something does go wrong, then it's too late. You got to be ready and realize the danger that's there. So what do you say when a guy who's been your best friend for 10 years comes and says, can you co-sign on the loan? So I'll tell you what I say. I have a tradition from my great-grandfather, and this is true, that my great-grandfather was a big businessman in Poland, and he always used to say, if you have the money to give, then give the money. If you don't have the money to give, then you have no right co-signing the loan. You should never co-sign. The tradition I have from my great-grandfather is never co-sign. So I was engaged to my wife, and we went to rent an apartment. And the landlord takes out the contract, and on the bottom line it says co-signers. So I said, I have a problem. I want the apartment, but I can't get you the co-signers. So he said, why not? You have your parents-in-law, and you have your brothers-in-law, and you have so many people now in your family. And I said, yeah, but I'll never co-sign for them, so I can't ask them to co-sign for me. So what do you do? So I said, I'll give you a larger deposit. How much of a deposit do you want instead of getting a co-signer? And that's the same thing I say when guys come to me and ask me to co-sign. I say, if I could afford it, so then I'll give you the money, or I'll lend you the money, or we'll work something out, and you'll give a bigger deposit, but I can't co-sign. If I can't afford it, then I have no right to co-sign anyways. The tradition I have from my great-grandfather is that when you co-sign because you assume, I can wing that, but you don't have control over when they'll come collecting, and who says then you'll be able to wing it. Maybe just then you'll have to marry off a kid, maybe just then your stocks will collapse, maybe just then your landlord's going to raise the rent. You don't know when it'll come. And Murphy's Law, it'll come when you're not ready for it. So the tradition I have is that I always say no. I say, my tradition from my great-grandfather is that I'm not allowed to co-sign. I'll help you however I can, but I cannot co-sign. And now you guys can say that you learned, your rabbi told you that you should never co-sign. King Solomon said it, not me. Look, family is different, that's the truth. But you have to know where to put the limits. And you also have to try and find ways to get out of it. Try and find other ways, like I do. Give a bigger deposit. I once went with one of our guys to his landlord, and I said to him, look, I know you want me to co-sign for him. I can't co-sign, but let's work out on the deposit what you'll be amenable to. And they worked out something. I didn't have to lay out a penny in them. The guy had enough money to give him that much, and the landlord, when he saw I was willing to come down and talk to him, that it wasn't that this guy had no friends and no rabbis and no one to talk for him. It was just that I can always say it's my tradition. So he respected it. Yes?
So in the situation like that where you're dealing with like a private landlord, it could be one thing, but like you're actually trying to take out like a loan from the bank.
That's why I said family's different.
Like a mortgage or something.
That's where sometimes parents will do it for kids and brothers will do it for one another, but you have to really limit it, and you have to really, really, really think hard if there's a way to get out of it. And if it's responsible to enter such a deal.
But I mean, like, isn't that even a higher risk than for kids?
It depends on if you could afford it or not. You know, sometimes you say, for my kid, I'm willing to do whatever it'll take. A, I know he would never, hopefully, I know he'd never renege on the loan. And B, if it happens, so then for him, I'm really willing to kill myself. I'm really willing to do everything it takes. Right, but you have to, like Shlomo Amar said, you have to realize you're entering a trap. Don't ignore the fact that you are co-signed and you are in a dangerous situation. Very often we like to think that he has a good job and everything's good, and what's the problem? Shlomo Amar says no. Okay, we're going to pause now. We'll take a break.